Previously on Nighthawk's podcast.
You're basically looking at a mysterious killer who is attacking young people, usually teenagers. A lot of times these teenagers are engaging in morally ambiguous behavior. They are often said to be cautionary tales about such behavior. They're usually very exploitive with violence and gore. These movies will spawn many sequels, many remakes. This is a well that Hollywood keeps going back to.
The full franchise kind of blurs together for me, but the truth is Friday the 13th, number one, I had not watched all that much.
But I mean, I think every holiday, with the exception of maybe one or two, has a slasher movie attached to it. You've got April Fool's Day. You've got Black Christmas. You've got Silent Night, Deadly Night. You've got Thanksgiving. You've got Uncle Sam on 4th of July. The list goes on and on and on and on.
Almost a comic book continuity level of, did we say he was dead? Did we really say he was dead? Or did we just show him fall into the reservoir?
Friday the 13th hasn't quite rebooted as many times as Halloween has. We're looking at 12 films in that franchise. We've got 10 cohesive films in the original canon. We have one crossover event film, Freddy vs. Jason, and then we have one remake that was a remake of the first three films all shoved into one feature-length package. This is something we didn't touch on in the last episode. What defines a remake versus a reboot versus a reimagining, etc.? Like, what criteria would you ascribe to that?
I believe the technical term is how much did they change stuff?
Okay. That's fair.
Like, you know, how much did they change stuff?
So they changed some stuff in the Nightmare on Elm Street movie that we covered in our previous Monstoberfest episode. So was that a remake, do you think? Or was it more of a reboot? I'm trying to gauge your where the barometer is here. I have a fun hypothetical for us.
I think I'm an easier sell on reboot.
Okay. So here's our fun exercise question. Now, obviously, by title, ABCs of Death Part 2 is a sequel to ABCs of Death. However, if we were to remove the title from the equation in a little pretend sandbox, what stops ABCs of Death 2 from being a reboot or a remake? Like, other than marketing, is there something that signifies sequel versus reboot remake? And I'm using ABCs of Death because it's a kind of a nebulous horror anthology.
Oh, I think in the case of ABCs of Death, it's just sort of the nature of the anthology that it can have more than one volume, you know? I don't know. I'm you got me.
Well, okay. No, I mean, I like that. I would agree with you. What about other films in the same vein, like Creepshow 2, VHS, Trilogy of Terror Part 2, which is not part of an actual trilogy? Like, those are all kind of anthology films, too. So, like, is there a remake, or do you just make another Creepshow? There's another Creepshow on Shudder right now. It's a series. So do we just call this another volume, or what's the marketing on this?
Well, Trilogy of Terror had three parts, didn't it?
Yeah, each Trilogy of Terror movie is a trilogy in and of itself. There's only two movies, though. But they both have the same conceit in that all three chapters of the horror trilogy enclosed in the singular movie feature the same actors.
And they never made a third one?
To my knowledge, they have never made a third one.
It sounds like a trilogy of errors.
Aw, oh, womp womp. I like it.
I deserve profound mockery.
So, to that end, Matt, here's where this is all going. With Halloween, the 1978 John Carpenter, Deborah Hill movie, that was originally envisioned as an anthology franchise. So the first two movies were the story of Michael Myers, then we went to Season of the Witch, and then it was supposed to be something else, but and Season of the Witch didn't do so well, so they went back to Michael Myers. So if we stick with the theory that it's still an anthology franchise, is the Rob Zombie take just another take, or is it a remake? And to that end, how many, like, this gets real messy.
You're making me think too hard, damn it. I think it's too close to the same story to be another segment in the same anthology.
Okay. All right, that's fair.
KOKW calling. I'm on international frequency. Come in.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away.
He's trying to cheat us, Pepe. All this talk is so he can get a better price, so he can make fools of us.
Yeah, it's so easy to make a fool of me. Why don't you try it sometime?
Well, I got something done. I got a job at Mr. Greenfeld's sporting goods store, and he promised to do anything he can to help me to get to Texas.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up. I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section. They share one thing. They all need money. Now let's see if they're brave enough to earn it.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast, the spooky podcast.
Now with extra spook.
The podcast that goes on the mic. We talk about movies into the witching hour. My name is Trevor T. Trujillo. I am one of your co-ghosts for the evening in the haunted cafe with me, as always.
I'm Matt Foster, and I really miss the old Crypt Keeper.
But we are a podcast on the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network. We talk about films into the witching hour. You can catch up with other podcasts on the network, including the flagship podcast, the Hello Sweetie Podcast, Back from the Dead. And going strong now, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Google Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us wherever fine podcasts are caught. You can find us in the basement with Ouija boards. You can find us in the cemetery after dark. Where else can you find us, Matt?
Stitcher?
Stitcher after midnight. Nighthawks Nights. This is not Nighthawks Nights, though. One of these days, maybe we'll figure out what the hell that is and we'll actually do it. But this month is Monstoberfest. And depending on when this is released, it might be Monstemberfest. Folks, we had some exciting things happening at the old Nighthawks Cafe. And as a result, we kind of put the show on hiatus, production-wise, which means you're probably listening to this a little later than we had originally intended, but for good reason, because if everything tracks and works out, the last two episodes were our live coverage in Telluride.
You gotta understand, we're not a national news bureau with a ton of foreign correspondence.
We do this on our own. We're a plucky group of likable anti-heroes who just do this thing, you know? By the way, special thanks to Mark for coming on the podcast and coming to Telluride with us. You know, Cameron is the Oscar czar. I think at this point we can officially designate Mark the Black Pope of horror on the Nighthawks podcast. You think that's okay? This is the second Monstoberfest we've had him on.
I think that's fair. Or he could be our festival czar.
Actually, festival czar is good. I think if anybody is going to be Black Pope, it has to be friend of the podcast, Nicholas Don Smith. Arbiter of metal.
He is extremely dark with an RQUE.
Well, this is our second week of Spawn of Monstoberfest here at the Nighthawks Cafe. Yeah, that was a little, my approximation at a Boris Karloff.
That's an imitation that is good.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. You have given me a warm fuzzy.
You should do that at the club. Be like, I would like to dance with you.
Excuse me, dear.
Would you like a jello shot?
Can I imagine just latter-day Boris Karloff just eating some pudding? Like, he's eating flan, and he only likes the top layer. He's trying not to get too much custard on the bottom. And he's just really getting it everywhere.
God, I love where this podcast goes sometimes. Where are we?
Always to the place of flan.
Oh, we are a pair. Oh, you. But where are we supposed to be going, Matt? What are we doing for this evening?
We're supposed to be continuing Spawn of Monstoberfest by talking about the 2009 reattempt at Friday the 13th.
Yeah, this is why I raised that strange question at the beginning. And I'm letting you know that, yeah, that was kind of a loaded question. I was setting it something up for later. But yeah, that's what we're doing. But first, Matt, I wanted to sneak this in since what we're doing for Monstoberfest this year, Spawn of Monstoberfest, we're doing remakes of movies that we have previously covered on the show before. So we had previously covered Friday the 13th from 1980 on episode 51, and that was a Monstoberfest episode where we were doing a little double feature action. We were also taking advantage of a calendar coincidence that year, and we covered Friday the 13th and Halloween from John Carpenter simultaneously. That's once again episode 51. What I wanted to do, I wanted to sneak this in since we're talking about remakes, reboots, remixes, is the weird history that Ghostbusters has kind of developed over the last few years. And we're going to do a little bit of a teaser talk or trailer talk at the top of the show here. Matt, when was the last time you watched this teaser for Ghostbusters that was released in like January this year?
January this year.
Well, let's take another look at it, shall we? I don't know that this is going to make for particularly good pod fodder, but we'll see how it plays out. This is going to be a very orchestral interlude for our listeners at home, but let's give this another watch. It's nothing fancy. It's just a little something. I think the entire intent of this particular teaser was to just let people know that this movie was even a thing. So obviously we don't get any details. It's basically just the announcement of the movie and it's done cinematically. But what do you think? We'll have a link to this in our show notes too, by the way.
I mean, not giving you a lot to work with there, are they?
No, I mean, we can kind of extrapolate what we know from what we've found out in the movie press, you know, since then. We know it's Jason Reitman that's doing it, son of Ivan Reitman, who directed the originals. We've got the returning cast, like a lot of good news here, but there's not much to work with here in this particular teaser. But does just the announcement of a sequel to Ghostbusters do anything for you?
Yeah, I like the property. I'm glad it's getting some stuff.
You know, it was always one that felt like it needed to be a trilogy, and I think that's just me growing up in the Back to the Future, Star Wars, Indiana Jones era of the 90s. Everything seemed to come out in trilogies there for a while, The Matrix. And, you know, why not Gremlins? Why not Ghostbusters? So, you know, I'm excited for the property, but it is worth mentioning that as far as not a sequel goes, this has been remade, or I guess by our criteria that we discussed earlier, rebooted?
This is definitely a reboot. It's not a sequel because it ignores a lot of old continuity.
Yeah, we're talking about the Paul Feig Ghostbusters with the recognizable cast of Saturday Night Live. Also known, politically as the female Ghostbusters.
And I don't know. I think it's definitely a reboot. They were trying to take it into a different place.
Yeah, I mean, they even have the original cast back in different roles. Like, this is definitely intended to stand on its own. But it is not the same story from the original movie at all either.
It's not a remake and it's not a sequel. That leaves a prequel or a reboot. It's not a prequel. Ergo, it's a reboot.
There we go.
Quid pro quo. Res ipsa loqua.
Ipso facto hath not be. How did you feel about the Paul Feig Ghostbusters?
I was luke on it. Like, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, I didn't hate it either. Like, I think it got a lot of unfair panning. That being said, it's also not that great. Like, and it the big controversy with that, the elephant in the room that we're kind of tap dancing around, is that it was the all-female Ghostbusters, and some people made something very big out of that. On both sides of... A lot of misogynists took it that way, too, and a lot of feminists took it that way. Battle lines were drawn, and the least of the problems in this movie was the cast. The cast was fun. The cast worked for me. I liked the cast. Melissa McCarthy is somebody who I'm not the biggest fan of. She's got a lot of talent. She's just kind of Will Ferrell-y.
Yeah.
She does a good character, and she is a good dramatic actor, but sometimes we take her good character and stretch it into a 90-minute movie, and it doesn't work, you know?
Yeah, I found it, like it had a lot of, it had some funny stuff in it. Like, and this is one of the gags everybody found political, but they hire Chris Hemsworth as a male secretary, and he's very dumb, and Kristen Wiig hires him expressly because he's cute.
Yeah.
And, like that got... drew a lot of fire for being like man hatey, and I'm like, it's an obvious reversal of a trope,
right?
And it's also like it's also like oddly the opposite of what they did in Ghostbusters, where they hired someone who not hideous or anything, they did not hire a bombshell Gail Friday. They hired a good secretary.
Yeah, they hired Annie Potts, who is a good-looking woman. She's just not a drop-your-face in her cleavage.
Well, she's not a stereotypical 80s movie secretary.
Right. She was probably hired for her resume.
And it's a funny joke. Like, it's a bunch of woman bosses have a himbo around that they don't care. They're like, it doesn't matter because he's pretty. Like, at the very least, you have to give it credit and admit it was a deliberate attempt at a subversion.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some unnecessary CGI that was a little rough. There was a lot of stuff that was really kind of like that Ben Stiller person that can't stop and explain themselves. Like, I want to say Larry David, but it's actually funny when Larry David does it, you know, like kind of that, yeah.
This is so awkward and I'm trying to save face.
Yeah. How come you can't just stop and go, hey, Bob, I accidentally let the cat out. I'm sorry. I'll go look for the cat. I hope we can still marry your daughter, you know?
Honestly, my biggest problem with Ghostbusters is there is just a lot of hacky writing in there. Specifically, the terribly green screen CGI Ozzy cameo, where you can just tell they brought Ozzy into a green room for a day and he shot his line probably 30 times and then they let him go home. Like, it was the most groan worthy pinch the bridge of my nose, which I am doing right now, moment in that movie. And it's just, there was a lot of bad writing. That being said, the cast should probably be celebrated for making this movie as good as it was, because Kate McKinnon in this is a treasure. Leslie Jones is a treasure. Melissa McCarthy is really good in this. Kristen Wiig is really good in this. Like, Chris Hemsworth is really good in this.
There's also some weird, like, there's some cutting in the third act. Like, you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
Like, there's a part where, like, the spirit controls everybody. And you can sort of tell that there's a version where that scene went on a lot longer. And I'm pretty sure it had a dance number in it.
Hmm.
Like if you watch that, if you remember how like he holds his finger up for silence and everybody else does it, and he starts to make them do synchronized things a la Beetlejuice, and then that all gets like lost in the tumble, and they never revisited it. And then later, when everybody gets unfrozen, it looks like they're all in like weird patterns and stuff, like they did a big dance number, and it got cut. And there's too much of it left in. I don't know. That's just it's a theory. I haven't Googled it to see if I'm right. But
yeah, it's just it wasn't a great movie. And honestly, I don't know that it was that hot of an idea, because when you do something like that with a property that's so well beloved as Ghostbusters, like the yardsticking already begins at the casting. Like, are these people going to be able to hold up to the boys? And it would have been just so much better if they had made this a cool Ghost Hunters movie without the franchise, without the license, and it would have worked so much better. But you know what? At the same time, I have to say that even though it didn't scratch my Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson itch, it did kind of scratch my The Real Ghostbusters itch. Like, it felt like about the same tonally as some of the latter day, maybe Dave Coulier episodes of The Real Ghostbusters. I'm going deep on you there.
What did he have to do with it?
He was the voice for Venkman when Lorenzo Music was dismissed after... there's this apocryphal story. I don't know how true it is, but originally the voice of Peter Venkman in The Real Ghostbusters was done by Lorenzo Music, who also did the voice of Garfield on Garfield and Friends. And I guess an offhand comment was made, or at least I want to believe it was an offhand comment that somebody else took a little too seriously. But I guess Bill Murray asked the question one day, why does Peter Venkman sound like Garfield? And then I guess Lorenzo Music was dismissed from the show and Dave Coulier was brought on. And he does a kind of Dave Coulier approximation of Peter Venkman.
Hi, I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
And we host the podcast Rebootleggers, where we come up with ridiculous reboots for movies and TV shows that no one asked for.
Like, what if Friends was an anime?
Or what if Terminator 2 was a high school play?
What if The Giving Tree was a dystopian trilogy?
Find us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you get podcasts from, every other Wednesday.
What if the Golden Girls were all Russian spies?
Yeah, dude, I think they get it.
What if the Shaggy Dog was a space opera?
Okay.
What if the Boxcar Children were hipsters? What if Ancient Aliens is a documentary?
Hello, sweetie.
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
Hello, little boys, little toys.
I'm a bunch of a-holes.
Guess who's back? Back again. Sweetie's back. Tell a friend.
That's right. Hello, Sweetie podcast is returning with brand new episodes starting August of 2019.
That's right. You heard that correctly.
You can hear us talk about so many things like tiny hats, thimbles, turtles, your mom's house, the internet,
tiny dogs,
a game you play on your TV,
tiny dogs wearing tiny hats,
little books,
cigarettes, lots of small things.
What's with the small things?
Talking about the news in the movies,
TV,
the comic books,
music,
video games,
science, and more. Find us everywhere you found us before. Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, the internet, and Google Play.
World's Backest Podcast.
Last night, I journeyed through cyberspace to the conceptual Nighthawk's Diner. In this amazing podcast, the hosts discuss movies, classic movies, new movies, good movies, bad movies, movies that haven't been made yet, movies from Norway. Each movie a journey, each episode giving valuable context. The films were made accessible, and I was victorious. Nighthawks Podcast. All episodes downloadable separately. Available through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are found. A member of the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network.
But, in the meat and potatoes of our Halloween dinner this evening, we are going to take a look at the 2009 remake of Friday the 13th.
Yes, and we should start talking about it soon.
That's true. So this is a restart of the classic franchise that was originally launched in 1980 with Sean S. Cunningham's original Friday the 13th. But this particular go-round, a simple remake of the original just wasn't going to do. Spoiler alert, in the 1980 film, a summer camp is reopened after an accident that happened 20 years previous. That resulted in the death of a young disabled camper. A few decades and some change later, a group of 20-something teenagers arrive at the camp, set things up for a new generation of campers at Camp Arawak. However, somebody is displeased that the camp is reopening, expresses that displeasure by murdering several of the camp counselors. Our lead protagonist manages to escape the fate of her fellow counselors and discovers that Pamela Voorhees is the mother of the boy who died, and she has also been dispatching most of her friends. A scuffle is had, Alice is victorious, or is she? In the 2009 edition, the plot of the first film is almost totally explored in prologue. This is a remake, probably more accurate to say reboot, of the franchise as a whole, covering several moments, recognizable moments from many of the early Friday the 13th films, but there's not a lot to synopsize here. We have young, attractive 20-somethings head out to the woods, discover a boarded-up summer camp, and a hulking, lumbering killer that has lived here for 20 years. Sex is had, blood is spilled, Jared Padalecki stars, and as far as I can tell, this wholly unsupernatural. Spin on the Friday the 13th franchise.
Because he was in a show called... I got it.
Now he's still... Dude, that show is still on. Not that I'm complaining. Like, it's a good show. The little that I've watched of it, I've enjoyed, but...
I thought that it actually wrapped pretty recently.
Oh, did they? Maybe they did. I don't know.
But the very long running, I believe it had 15 seasons or something.
Yeah, something absurd. Like, if you want to commit to a show on Netflix, that's about the only reason I actually probably haven't picked it up, is that it seems like it's a pretty stiff commitment. But it has fans. It has rabid fans.
It goes down easy.
So I guess we should also mention, spoiler alert, Pamela Voorhees is only the killer in 1980, and for about 2 minutes in this film, the franchise otherwise deals with some giant dude named Jason. So here's our remake questions to answer. You remember this list from the last episode, Matt?
I'm going to say yes, but wait for you to read them.
Okay, so some of the things to consider. Is this a faithful remake to the source material? We've almost already answered that. If it is or it isn't, is that working for or against the movie? Is it doing enough of its own thing? Is it a, quote, worthy, unquote, remake of the original? Or does it do the original justice? Is it better than the original? Does it work as a good film standalone by itself? So, Matt, we have those bullet points to discuss, but otherwise, how did this leave you?
I liked it.
I did, too. Was this a first watch for you?
No, I watched it when it came out.
Oh, okay. See, this was another one, much like Nightmare on Elm Street, this was another first watch for me. Part of my thing is that I felt no particular need to see a new take on the original source material of Friday the 13th. And then by the time that I had heard this wasn't entirely that movie, it had just gotten to the bottom of my priority pile and I never watched it. It's interesting now, though, to have watched this and also to have recently watched Nightmare on Elm Street from 2010. They're contemporary films based on similar marketing from the same company. And so there's an obvious comparison to be drawn between the two. Now, I have to admit, I'm a Freddy fan. I was a harder sell on a Freddy remake, and I think that prejudice might be showing a little bit. But I actually feel like I enjoyed this movie, Friday the 13th, by volume a lot more than I did the Nightmare on Elm Street remake from a year later. And I'll go so far as to say that I really liked this and that I'm over the hump on it. And I think as a hockey mask Jason Voorhees killing campers story, it works. Maybe it's not the best in the franchise in toto, but it's not the worst either.
I actually kind of liked the approach they took here, where they kind of compact the first two movies that were a little muddier.
Mm-hmm.
And like, Friday the 13th is definitely one of those franchises, we've talked about it before, the effect where you don't always quite, like, you're not always thinking that accurately about what's what. Like the, you know, people have memories that they insist they're a fan of Poltergeist, but they're really thinking of stuff from Poltergeist 2.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
Not that Poltergeist 1 is bad, but they that like you know, the Pilgrim, he's really distinct for people. The preacher character is from Poltergeist 2, and people will be like, no, we're not. And so I like that they sort of squeezed the franchise, and we pick it up in what would be somewhere in the middle of the franchise, where we have the we get to the established Jason.
Did you know a young boy drowned here? He was my son, and today is his birthday.
Oh, yeah, baby. You won't believe my parents' cabin.
Pretty nice, huh? Hey, I'm not from around here, but I'm looking for my sister. She's gone missing. Have you seen her?
She ain't missing. She's dead. People go missing around here, they're gone for good.
There's something out there. We gotta get out of here. Come on, you guys.
Oh, my God. This place is called Camp Crystal Lake.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because the way it does... By the way, folks, we're not going to do a formal spoiler curtain on this. And that goes for, obviously, both the original, which we have already spoiled, and this current one. These are what they are, folks. There's no... you know, I'd say there's probably a little twisty-turny in Nightmare on Elm Street. There's definitely a third act kind of ride to take. This one is a little more, how to say this without sounding like an asshole, but like, I'm just going to come out and say it. I think as far as remakes go and as far as finding a formula, the formula for Friday the 13th as a franchise was an easier bar for people to hit than a remake or reboot of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 1. And I think they met that. And I think Sean S. Cunningham, who was director on the first one, the original 1980, he was on in a producer role in this. So there's nothing like going to the guy who basically wrote the formula. You know, there was slasher movies before that. There was Psycho. There was Black Christmas. There was Halloween. But really, the kind of exploitational slasher film... Sean S. Cunningham kind of made that genre. You know, he did it over one movie. He didn't know what he was doing, but he did it.
Well, and I think like what you're like the long and short of what you're getting at is that Jason is just a little more basic than Freddy.
Yeah, and actually, here's yeah, good. Good. You know what? I'm just going to stop talking in circles and say good. Yes, you're right.
and not that in a bad way, because like Freddy is a creature of nightmare. Jason is a specific one. He's that thing that's chasing you. You know?
And it is worth mentioning that I don't think he's supernatural at all in this. Like, they actually go to great lengths to explain some of the phenomenon, the phenomena of Jason Voorhees as being a little more plausible.
That's one thing I really like about this movie, actually, is so the whole sort of, I'm not doing it justice by compressing it, but the conceit here is that by living around the camp and living alone in a camp where people came to learn like camping skills, Jason's like really woodsy. Like he's like a level 15 ranger.
Yeah.
Like, and
he is just a big dude with problems who doesn't like people in his territory, you know?
And
it almost turns it into kind of it takes it back to kind of a backwoods murder exploitation film, you know?
Yeah, and he's built a bunch of tunnels under the camp, and that's how he pops up in different places. So you find out that his odd ability to be like walking one place and then suddenly be across the camp is like not magic. And also, when Jason attacks, like there's like a kill where he runs at someone, plants the machete in their head, and then very swiftly kicks them off with his boot. So he's like he's moving full speed. He's not the implacable rubber Jason of the 80s movies. And the guy that got to play him, I believe his name's Derek Mears. I don't quite know how you'd say it, but he's a guy we've seen on a lot of, he's been in a lot of episodes of Grimm and a lot of episodes of Lost Girl. He's always like the 8 foot tall guy. And he's a legit pro wrestler sized Hulk.
Big dude, yeah.
And
I think he's actually bigger than Kane Hodder.
Oh, yeah. Like Kane Hodder could not have been in this movie because he's smaller than Jared Padalecki by a couple inches. So that always cracks me up because the two, both of the guys from Supernatural are so effing big. But they're always like next to whatever's playing the monster in the movie. It's like, well, can't you just punch him? Because both of those guys are legitimately like pretty close to my height, and I'm 6'4¾".
Yeah,
I'm not gonna say 6'5", because we know the internet height police are out there. Have you ever seen the thing with the internet height police people? So there's like a whole crowd of guys dedicated to exposing celebrities for lying about their height. And they're like, this is me next to Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise claims 5'11", but I'm 5'8", and he's clearly shorter than I am. Like, it's a whole thing. Like, there's forums.
Who cares?
I don't know. Like, I mean, once you go down the rabbit hole, you care a little. You know, that's how rabbit holes work.
I guess at the end of the day, I don't particularly care what height Tom Cruise calls himself.
Well,
regardless of whatever the fact is. Like, if it makes Tom Cruise feel good to say that he's 6'9", so be it. I will look at him like he is a crazy person, and there is evidence to that. But, I mean, you live your life, man.
You're going to get us declared SPs again.
I thought it's hard to call them Jason's origins, because Jason's origins story is such a capsule elevator pitch of a story that there's not much to it. So there's a little investigation and a little backstory here that's built for Jason Voorhees that I think all comes from existing canon. I think aspects are explored that are different, but for the most part, the overarching tale is still the same. But yeah, I really liked the fact that he was just kind of a scary woodsman and brought it back to the stakes feel a little bit more satisfying when you know that Jason can be gotten at the end. And it's okay when we bring him back from the dead, and when we, you know, raise him from hell and then shoot him into space. All of these things have happened, by the way. At the end of the day, there is no remake treatment of Jason that can do anything to Jason that hasn't already been done in the existing series. And so I think tacking a little origin story and a little demythologizing of the tropes was entertaining. At the end of the day, I'm not watching these movies to get a satisfying detective story. There is a certain amount of expectation I have for a movie that is labeled Friday the 13th. And this delivers on that, but it's not a remarkable chapter as far as Friday the 13th goes. And so really, I think the two biggest sins that this movie has against it is one, that it's a remake, and that's kind of a marketing sin. And then the other thing is that it's just kind of like the slasher cheesecake, that aspect of it is so forgettable, or is so vanilla that it's kind of forgettable. And that's not like, I guess that's a small criticism, but overall I still like the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like there is something very rote about it, but I also have to say that if you're honest about the whole series, it's definitely above the 50% mark. That's kind of the criteria. Mm-hmm. Used in Nightmare too,
right?
Where I was like, if we're really being honest about the quality of this entire series, this would definitely stand out above some of the goofier ones. I mean, it does have some good practical, you know, if you're into practical death effects, that aspect of things, This is a pretty valid entry because it has some it does have some nice crunchy Jason attacks in it, and it has some fun stuff. It has it definitely has a little like 30-year-olds playing 15-year-olds.
Like, you know, I think when I was doing the synopsis, that was a little tongue in cheek. I think they're always kind of intended to have been mid to young 20s, but that is kind of the 80s trope of casting, you know, mid 20 somethings as 15-year-olds.
They're all like kind of LA hot plastic people too.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost to the point that it's distracting. You're like, these people did not come out here to be camp counselors. That's ridiculous, you know?
Well, it's important to note that in the 2009 remake, nobody's out there to be a camp counselor. It's almost a good, and this will address one of our questions, it's kind of a good standalone Friday the 13th movie. If you just want to tell a story about a hockey mask killer in the woods stalking campers, it is a good functional movie on that level. And I think the overall story is just, it's a group of people who are, you know, spending the weekend at this dude's cabin, and there's some wandering around in the woods. There's Jared Padalecki, who's on his little story arc where he's looking for his missing sister who went missing during a Jason Voorhees attack in the prologue. This movie has an insanely long prologue. Like, it's 25 minutes before we get to the title card. And that's where we compress those first two or three movies, get Jason in his hockey mask, and tell this kind of standalone, independent, not as slavishly quote-unquote remaking. There are some familiar kills here, but this is its own story. They're telling a new Jason tale here. And yeah, it all works for me. Speaking of the incredibly good-looking people, though, this is something we do have to address. Now, this is another movie from Platinum Dunes. We've discussed a couple of these now. So we've had this. Nightmare on Elm Street was a Platinum Dunes. We discussed a little bit the Platinum Dunes remake of The Hitcher on the episode before that. But producer on this one was Michael Bay, the infamous Michael Bay, apparently walked out of the premiere of this film saying that the movie featured too much sex. Now, in a segment I'm going to call What the Hell Movie Did Michael Bay Think He Was Remaking? This movie is very cheesecake. There is a lot of bared breasts and salacious, sexy moments. I'm not going to get into the ethics of that. I really don't have a dog in the fight as to whether or not that's right or wrong. But at the same time, if your goal is to remake Friday the 13th, that is a part of the Friday the 13th formula for good or ill.
Well, and it's really like a couple of these are really like they just come out to come out.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost as bad as Halle Berry and Swordfish.
You know, and here's why I feel like I want to give it a pass here. And then I believe there was no actual frontal nudity, but there was a lot of cheesecake in the Hitcher remake that I didn't like. Here it felt just better integrated. Now, again, I'm not going to die on the hill of whether or not sex in film is an ethical thing or not. I don't particularly mind sex in my movies, and this one seemed to call out the fact that they were doing the thing. They were playing with the trope. In The Hitcher, there is no established trope of cheesecake in the Hitcher movie. It didn't exist in the original, and The Hitcher is kind of a movie outside of genre to begin with. So it felt more disingenuous there. Here, I don't want to say it feels earned, but it definitely feels more in lane with what this project is.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. It's kind of like, to me, it's the funny good time nudity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's definitely more of the like give me some beads type.
Right. No, and that's fair.
But it's so like the scene I'm thinking of is the campfire one where,
yeah, she's undressing behind the guy, and
yeah, in a like public situation where she probably never actually, like, even a very forward person would be unlikely to.
Right. You know, that's actually, I think you just hit the nail on the head, Matt. I never credited Friday the 13th as a franchise for being quote-unquote realistic. I did actually say that about aspects of the original Hitcher, and that's probably why the inexplicable cheesecake and the inexplicable lovemaking during a time of crisis felt really super tacked on and skeezy. So I think, thank you for helping me to kind of contextualize that.
Well, I mean, you know, people do get their freak on in times of stress.
Yeah, it just, you know, when you have Neddard Stark stalking you, it just seems so inserted.
Lana, phrasing.
What do you think, Matt? This is obviously a remake, but let's play a little mini version of our game. Should this be sequelized? Would you like to see an offshoot franchise stemming from this particular seed of Jason Voorhees?
I mean, what's the difference between seeds?
Exactly.
Like, I guess you could start the Supernatural story over again.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to, I don't want to see these properties go the way of the Dodo.
Sure.
And that sort of means that, and like I think you hit it before, because there's just like so much has already been done. It would be hard to find a goofy thing that hadn't already, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this franchise went some weird places, folks.
the holodeck. This franchise went to the holodeck.
It did. And that was after it went to hell. So I did want to bring this up because exactly what, why is this even a remake, in a quote unquote remake in the first place? And it turns out that there's actually a little politic to that. This is IMDb trivia apocrypha, so take it for what it's worth. But Victor Miller, the screenwriter on the original Friday the 13th, said that the script was written in such a way that this particular movie could be deemed a sequel as opposed to a remake, because they could pay him less if the movie qualified as a sequel. So that's why the plot of the film is kind of an amalgamation as opposed to just a street retelling of the original film. Apparently this led to some legal action, because obviously he felt that the script they showed him was more of a remake, but he was surprised later to see the film advertised as a remake, and I guess when it went to arbitration, he ended up losing the battle and was ultimately paid less. And so, once again, I don't know if that's true. Like, that's coming from the IMDb trivia section. So, it was submitted by somebody with an internet handle instead of a name. I don't know how much of that is true, but it makes a lot of sense. Like, this does feel more like just a chapter of Jason rather than a remake of Jason.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. We here at Nighthawks are very pro money for the writer.
Mm-hmm. Love that writer. We grew up reading a lot of Joe Esterhaus in our formative years. Director on this movie, Marcus.
That's terrible.
Why?
It's terrible that happened to us.
So the director, Marcus Nispel, this is his second Platinum Dunes remake. In 2003, he was the helmer on the 2003 Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He also directed, do you remember Pathfinder, Matt? The movie about the First Nations people contacting the giant Vikings?
The movie where the forces of Khorne attack the uncontacted North America?
Yeah. And then there was also, he directed the Momoa Conan. However, previous to this, in something that kind of echoes something that we talked about on the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, he kind of came from a world of really notable music videos. And it looks like he was another crossover. Now, he's still working, unlike the gentleman in Nightmare on Elm Street who went back to making music videos. Mr. Nispel here is still making features. Yeah, just an interesting little tidbit there. This guy was kind of brought in by Mike. The politics of this are something I wish somebody would put together an oral history of this chapter of Platinum Dunes, because it seems like Michael Bay was trying to put together a farm team of music video directors to do the next generation of horror remakes. And I don't know, Matt, do you think it worked?
I mean, it kind of worked.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least.
I like a lot of these allegedly bad movies more than I should.
That's true. Like, I actually feel like we're probably going to get a little pushback on some of our takes here. But, and I see why people don't like them. If you're, like, diehard fans of these properties, it's probably not going to leave you very pleased. But I'm not that diehard on Friday the 13th, so I had fun with it.
Well, and then the other thing is we didn't pay $11 to watch them in a theater.
That's true. And we also had a nice buffer of almost 10 years. Exactly 10 years. 10-year anniversary of Friday the 13th. Welcome to this special episode of the Nighthawks podcast. Well, Matt, do you think Jason Voorhees is due for another remake, if not a sequel?
I'm always ready for more Jason. He's just like a lovable, fun character. I'd like to see what happens when they put him in the arena and level him up. Wait, is that Pokemon? I got my franchises confused again. I'm sorry.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I think I'm down for more Jason. I have gotten to the point in my life, and maybe this is a maturity thing, maybe this is a depression thing, maybe tastes change over time, but like, it's like I said, there's nothing that you can do to Jason at this point that hasn't already been done. So if we need to start from square one for some reason, I'll take that ride. There's no reason that we can't make another sequel to the third movie. Like, I mean, Pete, we are entering such a world of Elseworlds and multiverses and things that, like, there is no reason that we need to crucify a movie just because it's a remake. Crucify it upside down if you must, if you're that hard of a horror fan. But, like, yeah, I'm kind of over being a hipster about remakes. That being said, there's a lot of bad remakes. This one wasn't a great remake, but it wasn't a bad remake.
It was no, what's a bad remake? It was no
Fright Night 2, the other Fright Night remake. That was a bad one.
Yeah, but she was bitey.
Psycho, Gus Van Sant's Psycho, the classic bad remake.
All right, final thought. Final thought on Friday the 13th here.
Dude, watch it. Like, if honest to God, if you are looking for just a pull it out of your hat, let's watch the campers get slaughtered. This is a good compact way to get the whole early part of the Jason Voorhees story, one tight package. The kills aren't the best. The gags aren't as jokey. Like, it's not the pinnacle of any part of this franchise, but it's fun. And if you haven't seen it before, it's worth a visit. If you're looking for punchier kills or some more hoots and hollers, maybe catch one of the sequels.
It's worth watching if you've already seen Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale.
Well, Matt, I think that's going to bring us to a quick if-then. Do you have any recommendations off the top of your head? Actually, I'm going to say this. We're just both going to have to concede the 6-degree separation Jared Padalecki, Jensen Ackles relationship here. Because Jared Padalecki made this movie while he was on hiatus from Supernatural. And of course, when Jared Padalecki is on hiatus from Supernatural, so is Jensen Ackles. Jensen Ackles took his hiatus and remade another slasher movie that came out in 2009, My Bloody Valentine 3D, which is actually, I thought, a fairly worthy remake of My Bloody Valentine. Now, I saw it in 3D in the theaters. I loved it in 3D in the theaters. I haven't watched it since then, so I don't know if the fact that you're watching it at home in non-3D might affect how well I enjoyed that movie, but I enjoyed it at the time, and it's a fun little connection where Jensen Ackles and Jared Padalecki had a bit of that cosmic synergy and good old chumminess that they seem to have. Like, it's just, it's a fun thing, so I would recommend that.
For the legend they say on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on and on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
I want to say that's both of ours. Point to both of our houses, because that one's way too easy. But do you have any others?
I'm going to go, maybe we're about to get in a fight. I'm going to go with the Hatchet series.
Ooh, I like the Hatchet series.
Which are similarly, have similarly quick, nasty, practical kills, but are a lot goofier.
Yeah, that's, they're up to four movies now, three movies? I can't remember, but the first two were Adam Green and, once again, Kane Hodder, who... We had mentioned Kane Hodder earlier in the episode and then failed to say who he was. Kane actually has the record for playing Jason Voorhees the most times on screen. And so he was kind of the lionized, canonized actor for that role for a long time. And then he's an imposing actor. He does a lot of stunt work and a lot of horror work. And one of his other horror projects is this little is a wrong word, but I guess independent horror franchise from Adam Green. That's a lot of fun.
They're very goofy, but they are also very, they have pretty gross kills in them.
So for my if-then section, I'm going to crib a move from you, Matt. I'm going to say here's a remake that we're not going to discuss on Spawn of Monstoberfest. Do not watch the Platinum Dunes 2000 remake, or excuse me, 2003 remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Same director. I'm just not in love with it. It had a great trailer. The movie is just kind of bleh. However, paradoxically, do watch the prequel to the 2003 Texas Chainsaw Massacre titled Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning from 2006, if only because it ups the Arlie Ermey quotient, and Arlie Ermey is a tour de force. Lots of cool, atmospheric, creepy, hot, sweaty, Texas, gross, patina, etc., dirty, more adjectives. I liked the prequel, wasn't in love with the remake. So that's the... kind of weird, paradoxical recommendation I have. But other than that, I think that about wraps it up for me. Matt?
I'm right there with you on that. I'm going to... I can't think of a good one, so I'm just going to say The Legend of Boggy Creek.
Just because, or because it's like outdoors and campy? Like, are you just name-dropping Boggy Creek?
I'm just being a butt.
All right, Matt. Well, why don't you send our butts out?
All right. We're going to get out of here, guys, because it's almost morning.
It's almost the dawn.
Did you at any point actually name the movie you were talking about?
My Bloody Valentine 3D? I think so.
Right. Yeah, did you get it out? That was a long one. I tuned it out a little bit.
So anyways...
Hey, speaking of which, if we have Wyoming listeners in Riverton, they can catch Nick's stand-up stylings in Rock Springs on Saturday and Evanston on Friday. He's doing a little West Wyoming tour.
That's this week?
Yep. That's probably useless.
Yeah, that will have already happened, but...
I tried to synergize.
Nick, we tried, buddy. We love you. We hope everything went well.
Leave this in to humiliate me. It was no Raul Julia Street Fighter. Was that a remake?
It's a good question. It could be a live-action remake of the anime based on the video game. No, none of that's true. Why am I brain farting on bad remakes? There's a ton of them. The Day the Earth... Well, I didn't even see The Day the Earth Stood Still. I should watch The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Should you? I really miss the old Crypt Keeper.
Me too. Like,
the new show's good, but the new Crypt Keeper... He just doesn't have it.
There's a new Crypt Keeper. I haven't seen this.
Huh? And the new Creep... Oh, well, wait. Hold on.
Yeah, you're
wait.
Getting your Creep Show. You're getting your franchises turned around.
Well, it's got a guy that's like the Crypt Keeper, but not.
Huh. Well, I mean, there was that. Yeah, that tracks. It's been a while since I've seen the Creeps show, but and I believe there was actually even a Creep Show 3 that wasn't well received.